mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up, it's Election Day. The first results will begin to come in shortly after 6 p.m. as polls begin to close around the country. What should we be watching for to get an early indication of the way the vote count will go? Also this morning, what we need more than ever in the aftermath of the election, regardless of how it turns out, a lesson in understanding and sensitivity from the author of The Empathy Dilemma. And happening around town, a formal evening of style and elegance to kick off the holiday season at the Findlay Country Club. It's the annual Festival of Trees to benefit cancer patient services. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, November 5th, 2024. I saw a new survey on the Newswire this morning. 2,000 adults, 39% of those in the survey say that they have not made a new friend in over a year. They haven't made a new friend in over a year. 37% of Americans in this survey say they feel stuck in a rut socially, which I guess means that 2% are okay with not having made a new friend in more than a year. 2% of us are okay with that, but most of us feel like we're stuck in a rut. 39% have not made a new friend in over a year. And so do that today. Do that today. Extend a hand. Greet someone with a warm smile. Make a new friend today. How about that on Election Day? How about if we make a concerted effort to make a new friend today? Either before or after you vote. I don't know. I just think that would be maybe a good thing to do. Maybe balance out all of the negativity surrounding the election. 76% going on in the survey. 76% of those polled wish that they could spend more quality time with their friends. So maybe make that effort today. If not making a new friend, maybe at some point today you call up a friend that you haven't seen in a while, haven't hung out with in a while, and schedule something. Now, schedule a time to get together and just do something. Doesn't really matter what, just do something with a friend. So maybe make that a goal today. I know it's very Pollyannish, and you know I'm kind of viewing things through rose-colored glasses, maybe. So shoot me, but you know, let's make that effort today. Just a thought. Start off your election day. Ohio may see a record voter turnout for the presidential election, according to Secretary of State Frank LaRose's office. More than 2.5 million Ohioans have cast early ballots, and polls open at 6:30 this morning. Will be open until 7:30 this evening. In addition to the presidential race, of course, we have all of the House races, the Senate race between Sherrod Brown and Bernie Moreno, Brown narrowly trailing Bernie Moreno in the latest polls. That is from Emerson College, their survey from last week. And and there's another one, University of Akron Bliss Institute poll shows the Senate race in Ohio is neck and neck. The poll surveyed more than 1,200 registered voters, shows Brown with a 2-point lead over Moreno. So different polls, different results, but they all basically say it's very, very tight. It's neck and neck. It's within the margin of error. So it is a toss-up. As for the presidential race, that University of Akron Bliss Institute poll shows President Trump maintaining his lead over Vice President Harris in Ohio, 51-44%. So we'll see where the numbers play out when the vote is actually counted later on this evening. But oh, and by the way, speaking of counting the vote, the first results are actually already in. The tiny township of Dixville Notch, New Hampshire, continued their tradition of casting the first in-person votes in the presidential election just after midnight. And then they reported the results right after the vote. And they counted the votes. All six of them were tallied. And it is a tie. Donald Trump got 3 votes. Vice President Kamala Harris got 3 votes. So the early results show a tie. We can report that the early results in the election show a tie. Let's see. What else is going on? Marijuana is on the ballot. I know these days that doesn't get a whole lot of play. I mean, obviously, I mean, when states first started voting to legalize marijuana, that was a big, big deal. I mean, that was one of the big stories of the election cycles when states started to legalize marijuana. And then that was supplanted by gambling. I think that was the next big thing. States were legalizing sports betting and gambling. And then, of course, abortion has usurped both of those things as the big story in terms of statewide election voting. And but marijuana is still out there, and that is on the ballot in 4 states. In Florida, medical marijuana is already legal. Voters will be deciding on legalizing recreational marijuana in the Sunshine State. Similar question on the ballot in North and South Dakota. And in Nebraska, they are voting on whether to legalize medicinal marijuana. So they're a little bit behind the times where it comes to the marijuana question. So those are the marijuana issues that are on the ballot. Always worth noting. I thought this was kind of interesting, too. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day regarding the election. One company, and it's called Word Tips. I don't know Word Tips. I'm guessing, just from the context of the story, I'm not familiar with this platform, Word Tips, but I'm guessing from the context of the story that they are a platform that helps you write better using artificial intelligence, right? Helps you construct better letters, emails, that kind of thing. So anyway, Word Tips used AI to analyze the dialogue of some of the nation's most prominent politicians, including an analysis of stress and sentiment to find out which politicians are the most stressed leading up to the election. And I was really surprised at some of the results. I'll share them with you here. Who would you guess would be the most stressed politician? You would have to think it would be Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, one or the other, right? No, Mitt Romney is the most stressed politician this election cycle, according to this analysis. And Elizabeth Warren is the second most stressed. Coming in third on the list in terms of stress levels among prominent politicians, vice presidential nominee and Democrat Tim Walz. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I misread that. He is actually the least stressed. So Mitt Romney and Elizabeth Warren are the most stressed. Tim Walz, the least stressed. Let's see here. And they also analyzed who's using the most negative language. Donald Trump uses negative language 42.84% of the time. Kamala Harris, 37.31% of the time, according to the analysis. Mike Pence, former Trump running mate, former vice president, uses negative language 65.63% of the time. Democrat Dean Phillips is the most positive of all of the politicians analyzed, with just 33.89% of his words on the negative side. So, as the least negative, the most positive. I don't know who that is, actually, to be perfectly honest. Dean Phillips? Should I know that? That name sounds familiar. I feel like I should know who that is, but I don't. Which, I guess, just goes to show that, you know, the negative narratives are the ones that sell. Those are the ones that get your name out there and people recognize, because I immediately recognize all of those other names. Yeah. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, I don't know that anyone is voting on this in the country, but a new survey of a little over 1,000 American adults found that 90.4% of workers, so more than 90% of workers, 9 out of 10, support a right to disconnect law. There was legislation in Australia passed not all that long ago. You remember when this made headlines, protecting employees from constant digital communication from their boss. It gives employees the right to not respond after working hours when their boss tries to get a hold of them. The right to disconnect. And this survey suggests that 9 out of 10 Americans would support similar laws in this country. Maybe because the average American worker spends a daily average of 2 hours and 45 minutes on digital work communications. 2 hours and 45 minutes. 78.7% in the survey have experienced dread when opening their email, knowing that the boss is going to want something, whether it's during work hours or otherwise. And 81.4% have work communication platforms on their phones. They have ways in their phones, their boss, to get a hold of them after hours. 9 out of 10 Americans would support a right to disconnect law. Again, I don't know that that's on the ballot anywhere, but I thought it was kind of interesting, especially as we get your workday started on this Tuesday morning here. Something to think about.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly sunny and windy today with a high in the upper 70s. Showers move in later tonight, low around 60. It's election day, and some of the local races and issues we'll be following include the Findlay City Schools' 1% earned income tax levy, the race for the 83rd District of the Ohio House of Representatives between Republican Ty Matthews and Democrat Sheila Caressel, and the race for Hancock County Common Pleas Court Judge between Phil Regal and Alex Treese. In Putnam County, voters will be deciding on a renewal of a tax levy for mental health, alcohol, and drug addiction treatment and prevention services, as well as a tax levy renewal for operating expenses for the county 911 system. At the state level, Ohioans will decide on Issue 1, which, if approved by voters, would remove politicians from the redistricting process and create an independent commission in an effort to eliminate gerrymandering and draw fairer districts. Get a full rundown of races and issues on the ballot today in this story on our website. Polls will be open until 7:30 tonight, and remember, if you're in line when the polls close, you must be allowed to cast your ballot. The future of the CHIPS Act, which would give millions to Intel and their construction of a fabrication facility in central Ohio, could be in question.
House Speaker Mike Johnson making headlines by saying he would throw it out depending on the results of this election.
If you have a Republican majority in Congress and Trump in the White House, will you guys try to repeal that law?
I expect that we probably will, but we haven't developed that part of the agenda yet.
Now, Johnson later walking that back, saying he misheard the reporter's question. It's important to note, Intel has to spend the money first before it can be reimbursed by the U.S. Department of Commerce through the CHIPS Act.
ONN's Colin Dorsey reporting. St. Mark's United Methodist Church has announced that registration is underway for Findlay's Night to Shine 2025. Night to Shine is a global event sponsored by the Tim Tebow Foundation, offering an unforgettable prom night experience for individuals with special needs. This year's event will be held on February 7th at St. Mark's United Methodist Church in Findlay. We have a link in the story on our website where you can register and get more information. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Of course, our cover story this morning, Election Day is finally here, and the polls are open in the state of Ohio. The first results this evening are going to start to trickle in just after 6 p.m. as polls begin to close around the country. So what should we be watching for to get an early indication of the way the vote count will go? Joining us this morning is political analyst and commentator John Wisniewski, former New Jersey state legislature and gubernatorial candidate. And through the past 3 months or more, we have been told, John, that this election, this presidential election, is razor thin. The margin is razor thin. This is as tight as it has ever been, that all of the polls show a virtual tie. And then over this past weekend, the Des Moines Register puts out a poll in Iowa that shows Kamala Harris actually has a lead in a state that we didn't even think was in play. So my question, have we missed something in all of these polls and the expectations of what's going to transpire this evening?
No. And first, thank you for having me on. But I think one of the things you're seeing here is sometimes when we watch presidential races, we become hyper-focused on polls, and we fail to remember that voters move on a continuum, right? They're not fixed in time.
Right.
Things happen, things are said, ads are put out, and it's always changing. And so what you see is the momentum that has helped Kamala Harris, especially in the wake of the Madison Square Garden rally and some of the other things that have gone on, have propelled the largest cohort of our voters as women to make a decision, and they seem to be breaking in her favor.
So you still believe, as most analysts do, that this is going to come down to a half a dozen or so swing states, Pennsylvania being the most important?
Yeah, it's a race in seven states. So we've got 50 states in the District of Columbia, but it really is going to be decided by the voters in those seven so-called swing states that are all polling on the razor's edge. And I predict that we won't really have a clear picture of where this race is going until the polls close in the central time zone, waiting for Michigan and Wisconsin and Iowa to close. And then I think at that point in time, it may be in a position to be called.
What will be the first indication that will tell us? I mean, is there anything, as we mentioned, we'll start to get early results just after 6 p.m. when the first polls close in a couple of states, and more will close 6:30, 7, and so on. And kind of, again, this will happen in waves this evening, as it always does. But what will be the first things that you will be watching for that will tell us, you know, what the likely outcome is going to be?
Sure. Well, the three battleground states on the East Coast, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. How those states turn out can be an indicator of how other battleground states will turn out, because, as we've seen, Pennsylvania is on a razor's edge, as is Georgia. Harris is slightly ahead in North Carolina. And so you could imagine a scenario in which either candidate wins all three will have a very significant impact on what people will be thinking about what comes next and how the rest of the states turn out.
Will we know this evening? This is the question that I think everyone wants to know. Will we know the result? Will it be able to be called tonight?
Well, maybe.
A definite, you know, maybe. That's what
a definite. Well, here's the thing, right? You've got seven battleground states.
Right.
If one candidate or the other cleans up in five of those battleground states,
yeah,
then you can make a pretty comfortable prediction, because if you win all five, you're going to be somewhere near 290 electoral votes.
Right. So it's
even
over.
If there's a challenge in one, it won't make a difference.
Right. And it won't matter. We won't have to wait until, you know, Arizona and Nevada closes to get those, you know, West Coast battlegrounds.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. But, you know, all of these predictions are subject to what's going on in the mind of all of the voters who are heading to the polls today.
Yeah.
The pre-votes, the early votes, the vote by mail, those are all baked in. But
yeah,
there are still people who are hard to believe, right? But there are people who watched and went to rallies yesterday who have made their decision and are going to go cast that vote today.
So,
and we don't know how they're going to vote.
Yeah. Of course, that assumes that we will know in each of these individual states. I mean, again, if the polling is correct, if what we have been led to believe is correct, that this is a virtual tie, that it is a razor-thin margin, is there a possibility that a state like Pennsylvania can't be called tonight, that the vote is just too close and may be subject to a recount?
Well, that's certainly a possibility. all of these states that are battleground states have drastically improved their vote counting ability since the last presidential election. And I think that there will be a quicker turnout in terms of the official count of, say, the mail-in and the early vote than there was last time. And then it's just going to be about tabulating the machines. As I said, if you know somebody, as opposed to it being a razor-thin margin, if a candidate's coming out with a five-point margin that you know, and you've got 85% of the vote cast, then it's going to be almost impossible to make up that difference with the remaining 5%. And so the momentum seems to be moving in the Harris direction. So these battleground states that are on a razor's edge, even if they tilt 1 or 2 points towards Harris, then it could be an early call to the election.
Yeah. The reason I mention that is because if we don't know tonight, you got to wonder how ugly will it get while we wait, because in past elections where we haven't known the result on election night, it seems like it's a whole second campaign by both sides as if they are still trying to influence the vote.
Well, I think it's more one side than the other, in my opinion, that is spreading disinformation about the length of time it takes to count all of the votes. Everybody should be very comfortable with the fact that the people charged with processing this information want to get it right.
Right.
They want to do it right. And sometimes that takes time, right? Sometimes you've got, you know, questions about signatures and you need more than one person to look at it. And that process takes time.
Yeah.
And we ought to all agree, hey, whatever amount of time it takes, if it takes one day, if it takes two, if it takes three, just get it right. That's all we ask for.
That's the bottom line. Of course, it's not just the presidential election. We're watching very closely to see who will have control in Congress, and with all of the House races and the Senate being very, very close. We were mentioning yesterday that the odds have the Republicans taking control of the Senate, but only a slight favorable chance of maintaining control for the Republicans in the House. What do you see transpiring in those races?
Well, I think a lot of the outcomes of those races will be in part influenced by the presidential race. I ran for office for 25 years, and there was always a correlation between the top of the ticket and the next positions on the ballot.
Right.
And so if, for instance, if Kamala Harris does in fact win Iowa, you could see some of those contested congressional seats there flipping Democratic, and that goes for the rest of the country, as well as the U.S. Senate races. You see in some states, those races are also on a razor's edge or very close to the margin of error, and how the voters who are coming out today decide the presidential race will influence that. And so I think I remember the red wave from 2 years ago that didn't materialize, and I think that's another thing that we should look for this evening.
So is the most likely outcome a clean sweep for one side or the other, that if whichever side wins the presidency will likely control Congress as well?
I think there's a likelihood that this will be more decisive than the past two go-rounds. I think that voters are feeling a need to just get this resolved and you know, get back to their lives, and they want to send a clear signal. And so I think it will be more definitive than a lot of pundits are suggesting it will be right now.
Will it be definitive enough that whoever wins can claim a mandate from the American people? Again, in the lead up, this has been so close, and everything we've been told is that people are so divided. Is there any scenario where either candidate that wins could claim to have a clear mandate of the people?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because in years past, and in my first involvement in presidential politics was when Jimmy Carter ran and beat Jerry Ford. The fact is that politics has changed, and claiming a mandate requires, in part, that you have an opposition that recognizes that you have a mandate.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist right now. And so even if somebody does get a mandate, the other side will be saying, well, it's not a mandate because of this, that, and the other.
Right.
And so those days are gone.
Yeah. Again, John Wisniewski is a political analyst, commentator, former New Jersey state legislator and gubernatorial candidate. Breaking it all down is what we can be watching for this evening when those results start to come in. It will be an interesting evening, to be sure. John, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Of course, it is no secret that the world today is more divided and less tolerant of others than ever. And the fear is that divisiveness could come to a head and spill over the next several days in the aftermath of the election, regardless of which way it turns out. Maria Ross is a speaker and business strategist known for her expertise in strengthening empathy at work, but her ultimate goal is to enable all of us to practice healthy empathy in all aspects of our lives, and we kind of felt this was a timely and appropriate topic to talk about today. So, Maria, I want to ask you, first of all, about the title of your book here. It is called The Empathy Dilemma. What is the dilemma? What are the challenges that are associated with empathy in the workplace, as it directly talks about in the book, and then in the broader sense, kind of in the world generally?
Yes, we have been through a seismic shift in workplace culture and changes in the way that we lead. And the empathy dilemma is really about leaders who are struggling to balance the needs of the business with the needs of their people. And we've made great strides in workplace culture around bringing our humanity to work, understanding that we don't park it at the door when we go into the office, and that what's happening in our lives and in the world and in the economy is impacting our ability to be our most productive and most innovative at work. And previously, I wrote a book that made the business case for empathy about what is the ROI that can be achieved, that empathy is not just good for society, it's great for business.
Mm-hmm.
But through the pandemic and now, coming out of the pandemic, leaders are struggling with the realities of making tough business decisions with still honoring the needs of their people. And so that's really the dilemma that I want to help leaders through, and actually everyone through, whether you're a leader in a company or a leader of your family, to help you understand what those foundational pillars should be to help you achieve that balance.
What does, and I guess this is a good place to start by defining the term, what does empathy really mean and what does it not mean?
I love this question. The definition of empathy has changed over time as we've learned more about the brain and about psychology, but a really accessible definition for people is that empathy is the ability to see, understand, and where appropriate, feel another person's perspective, and then use that information to act with compassion. So compassion is actually empathy in action. Now that I understand your context and where you're coming from and how you might be thinking and feeling, now I can figure out a next right step to take together, whether that's simply just listening, whether that's making a different decision, whether that's altering a decision that's been made, or whether it's just giving you space to process something. Those are all actions we can take to support someone else. What it isn't is it's not being nice. I get that a lot. Well, if you're just nice, that means you're empathetic. No, it doesn't mean you see my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy is not about caving into unreasonable demands. You can make a tough business decision, but do it in an empathetic way and a compassionate way. And the great thing, especially to your point about the times we're living in, empathy doesn't mean I have to agree with someone.
Yeah.
We can actually have an empathetic conversation where I'm just getting curious about your point of view and why you believe what you believe. And I can still walk away with my own beliefs, because there's a gentleman that practices empathy circles at the most divisive political rallies and is able to get people from two sides of the aisle together in a tent to listen to each other.
Yeah.
They don't walk away converted, but they walk away connected.
So this is a difficult concept for a lot of folks. You refer to the five pillars of effective empathy. What are they?
Yeah, those are the five pillars of effective and empathetic leadership. So if you want to, again, hold people accountable and be empathetic, achieve high performance and be empathetic, you really want to shore up these five pillars. And those five pillars are common threads that I've researched across hundreds of interviews and years of research. They are self-awareness, self-care, clarity, decisiveness, and joy. And when you are struggling with balancing empathy with performance or accountability or burnout for yourself, you may want to look at one of these pillars and see if one of them needs to be fortified.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. What tips would you have, or what strategies would you have for strengthening our empathy? And obviously, the book goes into much greater detail on this, but just in general terms and basic terms here.
Yeah, the book goes into specific strategies and tactics for each pillar and what that means and how you can practice that. I think from my previous work, the best, most useful example for your listeners would be that when you are trying to strengthen your empathy, understand that we are born with empathy. Science has proven that humans are born with empathy. It's how our species has survived. But your muscle may have atrophied. So just like going to the gym, you need to build up that muscle again. And one way you can do that is by practicing presence, making sure that you're silencing the chatter in your own head so you can be present and open enough to someone else's point of view without defensiveness or fear. So how are you practicing presence? Do you have some sort of a mindfulness practice, whether that's going for a run in the morning or meditating or prayer or, you know, training for a marathon, whatever it is for you that helps keep you grounded and recharges your battery, so to speak, so you can show up more fully in a conversation and not feel threatened by someone else's point of view? Another great way to strengthen your empathy, which is a really fun one, is I'm giving you full permission to binge Netflix. Because when you explore with your imagination, you are able to consume documentaries, movies, art, music, anything from written or created by someone with a different life experience from you. And you're able to practice that and stretch that empathy muscle in a really safe way. Like, wow, I wonder what that would feel like. I wonder what that would be like if I was in that position. Now I understand what that person is going through. I never knew that before.
Yeah.
And so you start to flex that muscle. So when you're in an actual conversation with someone, you can practice those same skills.
There are going to be times, because we're all human, when we are going to fail in an effort to be empathetic. Again, relating it to our politics, I talk to people all the time who say, I just can't comprehend how someone on the other side of the aisle feels the way they do. I just don't get it. So again, we talk about some of these strategies and tactics that we can apply to strengthening those pillars of empathy, as you were talking about. When we catch ourselves not living up to that goal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just talk to my husband. He's like, you wrote a book about empathy. we don't always show up as our best selves all the time. And it's a constant practice. You have to be really conscious of it all the time. But it is hard. And I think if you're able to, you know, especially those first two pillars of self-awareness and self-care, people often say, well, if this book is about empathy, why are the first two pillars about yourself and not someone else? Again, it's because you've got to show up whole. You've got to show up strong in the interaction so you're not threatened by the other person. So you can actually have a calm, civil conversation where you're asking questions and you're getting someone talking and you're not judging what they're saying. Maybe you're reflecting back what you hear, even if it's the craziest thing you've ever heard. You're saying, let me make sure I heard you right. Did you say this, right?
Yeah.
And then at least that lowers the temperature of the conversation. And now that person at least feels heard.
I got about 30 seconds here, but I do want to ask about that. Are there times or situations where empathy is not a good thing, when it would be inappropriate to have empathy for others? In other words, could this too be taken to an extreme?
I think if we look at the definition of being able to use it as a method of information gathering, there are very few situations where it's inappropriate.
Yeah.
I do in the book talk about, for example, a neurosurgeon dealing with a life-saving brain surgery. They cannot be thinking about the patient's family or the patient's feelings. They need to be focused on the work. I spoke to a police captain. Same thing. There are moments when you have to sort of shelve the instinct to accomplish the mission. And then you need to go back and treat people with empathy and then remember to re-engage with empathy based on what they're going through. But those are really the only times. There's not really a time at work when you're not dealing with life or death hanging in the balance where empathy is not appropriate if you're practicing it correctly.
Yeah. Maria Ross, again, is the author of The Empathy Dilemma. Real quickly, where do folks learn more about the book? Do you have a website we can guide folks to?
I do. They can go to theempathydilemma.com, and that is the book page on my website. They can get a free chapter there, sign up for my newsletter, and then they'll see all the other resources, my podcast, my leadership trainings. They'll see that all in the menu of theempathydilemma.com.
A lot there to think about today. And Maria Ross, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Information that makes a difference. Good mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Again, another one of those kind of light days for the broken news. Not a whole lot going on here. We do have a handful of items, most of them from the international file, actually, as it turns out. But one domestic story here, and of course it would have to be out of Florida, because usually there are strange things going on in the Sunshine State. I think it's too much sun. I think that's what it is. So here's the story. A Florida man has been accused of robbing a bank in Crestview, Florida, after being released from serving a sentence for bank robbery. And just been released, and he turned around and robbed another bank. So much for rehabilitation. The suspect was caught on camera wearing a yellow safety vest, straw hat, and a face mask with a hand in one pocket. I'm assuming he was, claiming that he had a weapon of some kind. Police in Crestview arrested 66-year-old James Keith Johnson in connection with the crime. He was previously arrested for two Florida bank robberies in 1995 and sentenced to 327 months in prison. But old habits die hard, I guess. Wearing yellow safety vest, straw hat, and a face mask. Not wanting to call attention to himself at all. Apparently didn't get any better at his craft while he was in prison. Let's see what else is going on here. A driver in London who got into a serious accident is appealing to anyone who might have witnessed the crash because he has no recollection of it whatsoever. Paul Carexi, age 53, of Kent, says, "One minute I was driving, the next I was being awakened by the police. With a swollen face covered in blood, there was glass everywhere. Said, I have no idea what happened." Wow, that's crazy. Mr. Carexi suspects he hit a deer and was somehow knocked unconscious before striking a divider in the middle of the highway. He was taken to a nearby hospital where he seems to be okay, except for the amnesia. His next stop is a neurologist for further tests. Wow. Asking anybody to come forward to explain to him what happened to me? What happened to me? It's like a story out of a movie, right? Also from merry old England, a zoo in the UK recently revealed that it released thousands of giant spiders into the wild. The zoo released thousands of giant spiders. When we say giant spiders, we're talking about spiders the size of your hand. And apparently they did this a long time ago without telling anyone. The Chester Zoo shared a post on Facebook where they said, 10 years ago, we helped release thousands of giant spiders back into the UK. The Fen Raft spiders were bred right here at the zoo, they said proudly. And we are super, super happy to report that there are now more than 10,000 breeding females out in the wild. And they have just had their biggest mating season on record. they were posting this, I'm assuming, figuring that people would be excited about this somehow. I mean, what are they thinking? The post goes on to say, you can't miss them. They grow to be the size of your hand. And the post concludes, you're welcome. You're welcome. We're releasing thousands of giant spiders. Suffice it to say that many of the comments on the post, many of the folks who shared comments were not quite as enthused as the zoo was. They didn't necessarily share in the excitement that the zoo felt over the release of 10,000 spiders the size of your hand. I think more than anything, they probably would be upset that they had been released 10 years ago without anyone's knowledge. You know, it's like, just tell us before you do this so we have a chance to flee. Let's see. And a couple of other items here in the broken news, again, from the international file. A Norwegian man dismissed by doctors as being obese for 12 years actually discovered that he had a 60-pound tumor growing in his belly. Thomas Kraut, age 59, had been put through a series of weight loss and nutrition courses, was even prescribed Ozempic at one point to try and lose the extra weight, but he couldn't understand why, despite all of his attempts to shed the pounds, his belly just kept getting bigger and bigger. It wasn't until he was being prepared for a gastric bypass operation that doctors discovered that it was actually a huge tumor growing inside of him. So he underwent a 10-hour operation to remove it. Turned out it weighed 60 pounds and measured nearly 21 inches in diameter. Well, that's an oops. That is an oops. The tumor had caused some damage to parts of his body, including a part of his small intestine, right kidney, which had to be removed. So he is now suing the doctors for failing to detect the potentially fatal tumor, which they claim is so rare that they can't be blamed for not detecting it. I just thought he was needed to lose a few pounds. Or maybe they thought he was the Santa Claus. It's like a scene out of the Santa Claus, isn't it? I just can't lose this weight. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the story of Kathleen Hennings. This is a good story. A story to finish up with a smile here this morning. Kathleen Hennings just recently celebrated her 105th birthday. She's from Great Britain, celebrated turning 105 years old, and she says she believes her long life is the result of a particular elixir. When asked, she's a retired accountant, when asked, what is the secret to a long life, she says she has enjoyed a pint of Guinness with her midday meal ever since her parents introduced it to her as a teen. She had a pint of Guinness with every midday meal. She says it was and still is a perfect match for every meal. A pint of Guinness. You want to live to be a centenarian? Pint of Guinness every midday meal. One of the secrets to long life, she says, is drink Guinness. That's number one. And number two, don't get married. That's her other secret. A pint of Guinness every day and don't get married. That is the secret to a long life. Hey, she's 105, so I'm not going to argue. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hear your vote count Tuesday night with complete coverage of the 2024 general election on WFIN. Fox News coverage throughout the evening on the presidential race, plus the local and area results, along with statewide coverage from the Ohio News Network. Democracy 24, presented by T.R. Williams Insurance, Tuesday night beginning at 7 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The latest national survey by the Pew Research Center surrounding the election finds that voters who support Kamala Harris are more confident in the way the 2024 election will unfold even than Biden's supporters were 4 years ago. They're very confident. Trump voters, meanwhile, are deeply skeptical about the way the election will be conducted, expressing even less confidence than his supporters did 4 years ago. So two voting bases going in opposite directions here. 90% of Harris voters say that they are at least somewhat confident that elections across the United States will be administered well. This compares to 57% of Trump supporters who are confident the election will be run smoothly. With respect to other questions that they asked in this realm, Harris supporters are more confident than Trump supporters that after all the votes are counted, it will be clear who won. 85% of Harris supporters say that, 58% of Trump supporters. So a majority of both, which is good. Harris supporters are more confident that mail-in ballots will be counted as voters intend. 85 to 38%, just 38% of Trump voters think that the mail-in ballots will be counted properly. And Harris supporters are also more confident that election systems across the U.S. are secure from hacking and other technological threats, although the numbers are significantly lower on that respect for both sides. 73% of Harris supporters are confident that election systems are secure. Just 32% of Trump voters feel that way. So kind of interesting about the ways both voting bases are approaching this election. Okay, if you have heard all you want to hear about the election for this morning, we're going to set that aside for a second. Talk about something coming up here in just a couple of weeks, a formal evening of style and elegance to kick off the holiday season at the Findlay Country Club. It is the annual Festival of Trees to benefit Cancer Patient Services, and Mackenzie Wagner is here from CPS. Thanks for dropping by. We appreciate it. Kind of give us a little bit of an interlude here, a little break from all of the election talk. So
yeah, absolutely. We'll flip to the holly jolly
yes,
for a second.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We'll get into the holiday mood, into the holiday spirit here. And I know it seems kind of early, but this is actually happening just before Thanksgiving.
So, yeah, absolutely. So it's actually not this Saturday, but next Saturday, November 16th, at the Findlay Country Club, starting at 6:30, we'll have the second annual Festival of Trees hosted by Ashley and Mark Bowler. And this kind of event has a silent auction, as well as there's seven highly decorated luxury Christmas trees. So if you've been looking for a new tree, this is the time to get it.
Do you get the tree and all of the decor and, everything? I mean, they are all decked out in various
to
themes
the
and stuff, right?
Yes, there's seven different trees, all different themes. There's classic trees. There's a peppermint tree. There's golden green. There's a boho tree, which is like neutrals. So tons of different trees for tons of different styles. And they even have somebody that will wrap them up and take them to your house.
Well, see, now that's always been my thing with the Festival of Trees is they look so beautiful, but then how do you get them home? So you've got that covered.
Yes, they have that covered. So there's a special company that's going to be packaging and moving the Christmas tree right to your home. So you don't even have to move a bulb.
You know, that might be the biggest selling point right there, is that you don't have to worry about decorating the tree. They come and just put it there and you're all set.
Why put up an old one when you can get one that's pre-decorated and brand new and supports a good cause?
Absolutely. Now, the trees are kind of the highlight, hence the name Festival of Trees, but it's certainly not the only thing that's going on.
No, absolutely not. So the event itself includes some heavy d'oeuvres, some libations as well, and then there's a large silent auction going on. I think there's like 20 different types of baskets, something for everyone's flavor. There's a airway inflatable for you and your family, or there's a bourbon experience, and then there's a Perrysburg experience. So not only just gifts, but actually things to do with your family or friends as well. So lots of very cool. There's even like a car detailing package. So something for everyone, absolutely, at this event. And it's kind of a fun little thing. It's formal attire, so you can get gussied up.
Exactly. This is definitely a night of elegance, as we were saying.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, again, it's at the Country Club, November 16th. And tickets are actually being sold right now, and there's only 200. So you want to make sure you get ahead of the ball and get your ticket so that you can plan your outfit and make sure you get a ticket.
Yeah,
you know?
The reason that we talk about it right now is because tickets are on sale and it is a limited number.
Yes, absolutely. So you can go to our Facebook page, Cancer Patient Services, and it's linked all over the place there. Tickets are $100 per ticket or $800 for a table. And this all couldn't be possible without the work of Ashley and Mark Bowler, and then their presenting sponsors, the Brown Company and Ohio Logistics.
It is going to be a terrific evening to raise some money, get you into the holiday spirit. You were mentioning a great date night ahead of the holiday season where you can kind of, I guess, I would say decompress, maybe decompress from the election and gear up for the holiday season ahead.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Kind of take a deep breath and,
absolutely. It's just enough time to grab a babysitter for the night.
That's right.
Take your wife or husband, do something special, and support some local cancer patients while you're at it.
So let's talk a little bit about that as well. And again, we've talked about it many times in the past for the benefit of those who don't know or fully understand what all Cancer Patient Services does. Talk about how you put these funds to good use.
Yeah, so Cancer Patient Services serves anyone that lives or works in Hancock County with an active cancer diagnosis. And we offer wraparound services. So the things that you wouldn't necessarily think of when you get, you know, when your family experiences a cancer diagnosis. So we have things like nutritional supplements like Booster and Sure. We have a whole back room of medical equipment and supplies, wheelchairs, walkers, hospital beds, everything in between. We also have a full-time patient navigator that will help you sort your bills, help you apply for Social Security disability, things like that. We have about 16 licensed counselors in the area that you or your family members can use as well. And then we have a healing arts program that a lot of people take part in, and it has, you know, different art classes, massage, Reiki, different things to kind of heal the spiritual side as well.
One thing that you know, that you find out immediately when there is a cancer diagnosis in the immediate family, is that there are so many other things that you don't expect that come up that put a strain on finances, on your resources, on your mental health, you know, all of that. This is basically what you do to address all of those things that fall in between all of the known implications of a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, absolutely. You know that you might not be feeling well, and that it's not only going to affect you, but it will affect your family as well. And for us to be able to help with things like financial reimbursement, so you don't have to worry about your mileage to, you know, if you're driving far for treatment or things like that, or if you have a loved one that's struggling with your diagnosis, that they can go seek counseling. It's just really important to be able to support the other aspects of the diagnosis than just the medical side of it.
Right, exactly. And again, to emphasize, Cancer Patient Services is cancer. Doesn't matter what kind of cancer we're talking about.
No, absolutely not. You know, we like to say that cancer doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care what gender you are, what race you are, you know, your social status in the community. Anyone can use our services that lives or works in the county. So even if you don't, you know, live in Hancock County, but you work here, you're welcome to utilize our services.
Yeah. And again, whether we're talking about breast cancer or colon cancer or skin cancer, you know, whatever, the list goes on and on, unfortunately. And you've got a wide ranging. That's the other thing that I think is important to point out, is that you have experience and knowledge in dealing with all of those different forms of cancer, because they all present, you know, some things are universal, but they all present their own unique challenges as
well. Oh, absolutely. And you never know what, you know, you might need for a cancer diagnosis. So we always encourage people to register with us early so that they only have to give us a quick phone call when they need something. You know, maybe it's a shower chair after surgery, or maybe you're losing weight, you need a nutritional supplements. You know, that's what we're here for. And we're really, you know, thankful to be in the community for 78 years this year.
So the Festival of Trees, it is coming up next weekend, and tickets are available now.
Yes, November 16th at Finley Country Club, and tickets are for sale now. Don't miss the opportunity.
Absolutely. It's going to be a terrific evening. Get you into the holiday spirit and raise some money. Get some great trees and other gifts, and you know, as as we mentioned, raise some money for a terrific cause. We have a link on our webpage for more information about it. And again, Mackenzie Wagner from Cancer Patient Services with us this morning. Mackenzie, thanks very much for dropping by.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. A reminder, you want to tune in this evening to WFIN and WFIN.com for up-to-the-minute results from the election, local, state, and national returns. As the vote is counted, our coverage begins at 7 p.m. again on WFIN and WFIN.com. And of course, tomorrow morning, we'll have a complete recap and analysis of those results. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Get out and vote. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.